This ain't Flubber, flying car, you will see. The youngest to fly around the world, and Congress slashes civilian GPS funding. This is Aero News for Tuesday, July 2nd, 2013. I'm Glenn Moyer. Terra Fugia will be returning for its eighth year as exhibitors at EAA's Air Venture in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, July 29th through August 4th, and the company and EAA say they are, quote-unquote, thrilled that the transition will be making its first air show appearance as part of the world's greatest aviation celebration this summer. The transition is scheduled to perform immediately prior to the night air show, with wheels up at 20:00 Central Daylight Time Wednesday, July 31st. The 20-minute demonstration just before sunset will feature conversion from driving to flying and back again, a flight demonstration, and a driving pass in front of the crowd. Throughout the week, the transition will be on display at Terra Fugia's exhibit in Space 23. Members of the Terra Fugia team will also be on hand with the aircraft to answer your questions. The transition is a light sport aircraft that combines driving and flying in one vehicle. Glass cockpit avionics, carbon fiber construction, and innovative mechanisms make the transition easy and fun to fly, drive, and convert, so the company says. A steering wheel and gas pedal and brake pedals on the ground make it familiar to drive, while a stick and rudder pedals provide responsive control in flight. Jim DiMatteo, the EAA's Vice President of Air Venture Features and Attractions, says, quote, "To see the transition take the next step and make its first flights before a large-scale public audience during Air Venture gives us a glimpse of what's possible in personal transportation. If it's aviation innovation, you'll see it at Oshkosh," end quote. Jack Wiegand completed his mission to break the current Guinness World Records title and has become the youngest person to fly solo around the world when he landed on June the 29th. A Fresno, California native, Wiegand, aged 21 years 7 days, broke the current record held by James Anthony Tan of Malaysia, who was 21 years 344 days old when he took the title in May of this year. Wiegand departed on his historic voyage from the Fresno Yosemite International Airport, and he headed east, making 22 stops, flying approximately 21,000 nautical miles, crossing three oceans and visiting 12 different countries. Wiegand circumnavigated the world in 58 days in a high-performance Mooney Ovation 2 GX. The title of the mission, Solo 2013, holds personal significance to Wiegand as it highlights some key elements of his journey as a pilot. He began flying at the age of 13. He took off on his solo flight in the year 2013, and he was 20 years old when he departed from Fresno for this mission to break the Guinness World Record title. Appropriations committees in both the U.S. House and Senate have voted to make deep cuts in the civilian community's contribution to the GPS system next fiscal year. In the House, the entire $20 million budget was stripped from President Obama's budget request. The Senate was a bit kinder. They cut $5 million, or 25%. The online publication Inside GNSS reports that WAS did not fare much better, with the House cutting $29 million from the $100 million budget request. The Senate snipped out $9 million. The president's budget request for the system was already less than half the amount requested in previous fiscal years, and analysts say the cuts could severely jeopardize development of the next-generation operational control system needed to control GPS-3 satellites that are now being built. The civil contributions had originally been put in place by the administration of President George W. Bush, who wanted the civilian sector to have some skin in the game for civilian uses of GPS. But the allocation has been reduced each of the past two fiscal years because the Department of Defense held, quote, "a significant unobligated balance," end quote, earmarked for GPS. Well, now the DOD has its own funding issues to contend with, and one expert on the situation told Inside GNSS that the Air Force, quote, "just can't step up and fill the gap for civil agencies," end quote. Hawker Beechcraft's bankruptcy, plant closings, and layoffs have cost the Wichita area some 11,000 jobs since the recession hit in 2008. That, according to an analysis by the Wichita Eagle. Aviation companies in the region now employ just under 25,000 people, down about 31% from 2008, when some 41,000 were employed by the aerospace industry in the region. The bankruptcy by Hawker Beechcraft and the pending closure of Boeing Wichita, along with deep cuts at Cessna, have accounted for much of the reductions. The recession caused many customers to cancel orders for airplanes, and companies are now doing more with fewer employees and outsourcing work in an effort to shore up their bottom lines. Cessna now employs about half the people that were working for the company in 2008, and Beechcraft Corporation emerged from bankruptcy with an employment roll of about 3,500 compared to 7,500 at the end of 2008. The Boeing Wichita facility focuses mostly on military contracts, and the company announced plans to close that facility in January of 2012. But there is some good news in the analysis. The paper reports that employment at Bombardier Learjet is up from 5 years ago after a sharp drop during the recession. The new Learjet 85, 70, and 75 programs get the credit for much of the increase. When Aero News continues, the Brits get their first Dreamliner. The Air and Space Museum is seeing stars. And Voyager is about to boldly go where no human has gone before.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Aero News continues now. For Tuesday, July 2nd, I'm Glenn Moyer. The first Dreamliner to be delivered to British Airways landed at London's Heathrow Airport Thursday at 12:10 local time after a flight from Payne Field in Everett, Washington. The airplane was welcomed to its Heathrow home by Willie Walsh, Chief Executive Officer of International Airlines Group, the company that owns British Airways. About the 787, Walsh had this to say, quote, "The 787 is a tremendous, innovative aircraft which sets new standards for environmental performance and operating efficiency, and I'm sure British Airways customers will love it. The 787 will become a mainstay of the British Airways fleet over the next few years," end quote. British Airways has announced that the airline will operate the 787 from Heathrow to Toronto from September 1st and Heathrow to Newark from October 1st. The British Airways 787 Dreamliner carries 214 passengers and is configured with 35 seats in Club World, 25 in World Traveler Plus, and 154 seats in the World Traveler Cabin. I suspect that's a fancy name for coach. British Airways, by the way, operates more than 140 Boeing airplanes with its fleet, including 52 777s, as well as the world's largest fleet of 747s at 52. This is the first of 24 787s that British Airways has on order. The Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum announced that it will receive a $6 million donation from the Thomas W. Haas Foundation to establish an endowment for its public observatory program. It is the largest donation ever given to the Museum for Science Education Programming. The gift is in memory of Phoebe Waterman Haas, the grandmother of the Foundation's president, Thomas Haas. Phoebe Haas, who received her doctorate in astronomy from the University of California, Berkeley, in 1913, was among the first American women to earn such a degree. She is believed to be the first woman astronomer to conduct her own telescopic research and not rely on the observations of others. She studied at the historic Lick Observatory near San Jose, California. To recognize the gift, the museum has renamed its observatory the Phoebe Waterman Haas Public Observatory. The observatory, which opened on a temporary basis in 2009, houses a 16-inch, 3,000-pound Bowler and Shivens telescope on loan from the Harvard College Observatory. A portion of the gift will be used to improve and upgrade the structure itself. Most of the gift will be used to create an endowment to support three full-time astronomy educators who will assist visitors with guided observations. The endowment also supports a new education program, Our Nearest Star, that will include events for school groups presented in conjunction with the museum's Albert Einstein Planetarium, educational materials and lesson plans for classroom use, and training in astronomy education for teachers is also included. And speaking of the stars, fiction is about to become fact. If you recall the original Star Trek movie, the crew of the Enterprise encounter a strange energy source called V'ger, only to learn later that it is NASA's Voyager spacecraft, waiting to download eons of data. Well, data from Voyager 1, which is now more than 11 billion miles from the Sun, suggests the spacecraft is closer to becoming the first human-made object to reach interstellar space. Research using Voyager 1 data and published in the journal Science Thursday provides new detail on the last region the spacecraft will cross before it leaves the heliosphere, or the bubble around our sun, and enters interstellar space. Scientists say they've seen two of the three signs of interstellar arrival that they expected to see: charged particles disappearing as they zoom out along the solar magnetic field, and cosmic rays from far outside zooming in. Scientists have not yet seen the third sign, an abrupt change in the direction of the magnetic field, which would indicate the presence of the interstellar magnetic field. Voyager 1 and its twin spacecraft, Voyager 2, were launched in 1977. They toured Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune before embarking on their interstellar mission in 1990. They now aim to leave the heliosphere and boldly go where no human has gone before. Live long and prosper, Voyager. I'm Glenn Moyer. Thanks so much for listening. You're now cleared for departure.